All right, it's me, and I want to thank everyone at the Oasis Podcast, as you were.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis Podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. Hope you guys are all right. Today we've got a bit of a two-parter. I'm catching up with our good friend Kyle from the Oasis Collectors Group about a couple of bits that he's got working on, including the upcoming event at the Rockfield Studios on the 31st of March. So yeah, really excited to say I should be there on the Friday the 31st. So yeah, I'll put a link to how you can get tickets for that in the description below. But yeah, if you can, get on down there and be quick, because I think there's only about 8 tickets left. So yeah, it would be great to see you down there. Very limited. So get on that if you possibly can. And also Kyle talks about, you know, maybe releasing this version of Street Fighting Man. Well, in the meantime, he's gone and done that. So I'll be dropping in a couple of clips. Plus also, you know, you can always give that a listen through the YouTube channel, which I will also be linking below. So we're going to be catching up with Kyle, and then I'm going to then be going through a little piece I've written and recorded about the history of every Oasis member and touring member, and kind of important people that have been involved in the Oasis story in terms of band members and things. So that's recorded, and I'll be bringing that to you after my chat with Kyle. And just to let you know, there is a sort of a companion Patreon episode regarding that, where I've actually ranked all 20 kind of Oasis members and major sort of member type people that, you know, done quite a lot with them, but weren't official members, you know what I mean? Anyway, so yeah, so go, you can check that on Patreon. But for now, we're going to go over to me and Kyle catching up on what's going on with the Oasis Collectors Group. Good. All right. Welcome back to the Oasis Podcast. Our good friend Kyle Dale. How you doing, man?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Not too bad. Feels good. Like about 4 hours since we last spoke.
Well, I don't know if that's a compliment or anyway, I'll take it as a compliment. That's fine.
Every week, promotion. It's well worth it.
Is it good? Yeah. So I mean, you've always got so much stuff going on, haven't you? I mean, it's like something pops up, and I think, oh, I must speak to Kyle about that, and then. And then something else comes up. And like, oh, we need to speak to him about that as well. So,
no, it's busy. I think with the Rockfield thing coming up, that's the main thing at the moment, because that's what we are now. Is it the first yet? No, it's the 28th, isn't it? So, it's the 28th now. I'm only going to put this one out, but it's this month, let's say. So that's the big focus at the moment. I've got a signing session to go and deal with in London end of this week. So that'll be that's fantastic, because you know what the best thing in the world is, driving from Edinburgh to London. Oh, it's fantastic. I love that. Such a great journey. Thanks.
Oh, God.
I'm looking forward to that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, I was going to say, I've done that once when I went up to, I stayed in, I think it was Edinburgh, sort of around and about Edinburgh. And yeah, I did it as a drive once. Never again, mate. Never again. That, I tell you what, the north of England is so big. You sort of, like being a southerner, you sort of think, well, I'm in Liverpool. You know, I'm by like Manchester. Like, I must be in Scotland soon. It's like, Jesus, how big is like Northumberland and Cumbria and all this sort of stuff? It just goes on forever.
The most beautiful areas where it always goes wrong as well. Because obviously I'm from Manchester, so I'll be stopping by. And like last time we did the Rockfield event, for example, it was a similar journey. I had to swing by to Manchester to pick up Arkida and then drive down for the rest of it. So it's nice to have a stop-off break. So I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to stop off and break and and then come back down. But I've got my mate's wedding on Saturday, so I'll be basically going from Scotland to Manchester, and then in Friday, Manchester to London, London back up to Scotland in one day. So that's nice, you know, around the country 1.5 times. And then on Saturday, I've got to drive back down again to Manchester. So, yeah, put some miles on the car. Yeah, fun and games.
So, well, tell us about Rockfield. So you did it before, didn't you? And it was I was gutted I couldn't get there, but it was an absolute amazing event. And yeah, you're doing it again. And hopefully, I can't go there for the whole thing. But yeah, it looks like I should be able to pop in on the Friday, which would be great. But tell the people about it.
About a bit, yeah. So I think that's what we did. What we did last time was we managed to get it over a weekend. Now the thing with Rockfield is, as you know, bands love it there. So you had to book months and months in advance, and to get 2 days next to each other is even harder. And then to get 2 days at the weekend is even harder. But the first event, we had it over the weekend, and it was kind of the tester model, really, to see if A, people would pay that much to go to an event, because it was like 250 quid, 235 quid a ticket or something. But, you know, that was two nights of accommodation. That was two days worth of content. Now, when you break it down, you'll pay 80 quid for a 1 hour tour, Rockfield. If you walk in off the street or book online, you pay 80 quid for a 1 hour tour. So when you put in accommodation and food through the day and beers and content, guest appearances, people speaking, Q&As, it was well worth it. So we thought we'll just do it again. But the problem is we couldn't get a weekend slot. So this time, we did realise last time, actually, as well, after the first day, what I managed to put together for people, everyone was saying, if I was leaving now, I'd be happy. It'd be well worth it, you know, for the money that's been paid. And they were right. And then what we did then was we went, what all, you know, music fans do when they all get together. We went out for a beer afterwards. Mm-hmm. So the next morning, everyone was awful. It was really, really rough. So I think we realised actually we need to rejig it a little bit and keep it to one full day, then have a good, you know, night out meal and a few beers. And then when you wake up the next day, you're not kind of having to, you know, put your tie back on and get back in the studio and carry on, which was, again, was great. But yeah, we condensed it down to one day now. So it's the Friday. The Friday the 31st of March is the content day. So whilst we have got full tickets with full accommodation again, they're in the hotel, so they're a bit more expensive than the last tickets were. So we've sold a good chunk of those. And then what we've done as well is we've just done day tickets where people can turn up and drive up there from 10 a.m. and spend the day there, and then if they want to stay over, get their own accommodation, come out for the curry and the drinks, they can do. Well, it's totally up to them. So we've got about, I think, got 8 tickets left out of the day ticket. So it's well worth it. It really is. I mean, if people want to see a taster of it, there's a promo video on the YouTube channel, the OCG YouTube channel. So you just search my name, Rockfield, it should pop up, and that kind of gives you a taster of what's there. Yeah,
and can you tell us what guests you got lined up, or is that still a secret?
Well, there's a founding member of Oasis coming to this one. That's what I'll say for now. A founding member of Oasis, so a Q&A between myself, him and Nick Bryan. It's myself and Nick that are putting these on. And then he'll obviously sign and meet and greet and do pictures with people. We've got, last time I did a Zoom call with Owen Morris, for the guys that came, and obviously we had a recording of that, so we can play that again, which is much easier to press play on a recording than it is to get Owen to commit to a time and come to it. so that's good. The content's unreal, though. I mean, even the walk around the studio, seeing where, well, not just Oasis and Roses, but Queen and Bowie and the Beatles and all these bands from history, there's stories in every room. You know, there's the Don't Look Back in Anger piano, and there's a Bohemian Rhapsody piano. There's stuff in every corner of every crevice. And, you know, whilst we've got new content from last time, different from last time, there is a very special item launching in the next 3 to 6 months. So anybody coming to this will get a first kind of dabble look at that and a chance to pre-order it. Unheard tracks, unheard stories, stuff that can't be printed. If you're a fan, seriously, it's a unbelievable day out. And I suspect, you know, with it being a Friday, all the guys on my group have been to it already or can come to it are there. So I thought the only option, really, I don't want to put it to public. I want to kind of keep it quite private. So the next obviously is your listeners. So if any of them guys want to tag on to that day ticket, then get in touch.
Yeah, awesome. All right, and what's the best way, then, mate? It's what the Oasis Collectors group on Facebook?
Our Instagram, kyle.ocg, is my Instagram. But yeah, or if they join the collectors group, I just say they heard it through the podcast, and we can do it that way. That's whatever's easiest.
Awesome. That's quality, mate. That is great. Brilliant. Well, look, I say hopefully I'll get there on the Friday, and I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah, to get the chance to sit on the Wonderwall, play the Don't Look Back in Anger piano, and yeah, meet Nick in person, who I've spoke to, meet the founding member who I've spoken to before, yeah, so that'll be nice to see him again. So yeah, very exciting.
And to meet the Wonderwall, of course. Yeah, that's right.
The Wonderwall.
On the Wonderwall with the guitar and the the other thing we're doing different this one, which I can say, is we're going to have quite a few unseen band instruments on show that haven't been seen before. That's quite a special thing that's caused a lot of hassle to get organised, but we've got a good few guitars and tambourines and bits and pieces that have been actually used by band members, owned by band members. So that's another specialty that's going to be cropping itself. But the aim is just to see what content works, see over a couple of events, see what content works. We've got some big plans for these events over the year. We're looking at going international by the end of the year. So look at and see what works well, and then move on from there. Yeah, busy.
Awesome. And then the other big one that I meant to give you a call about is the... is that you uploaded, having, you know, dropped the I Am The Walrus, you know, sorry, the demo with the I Am The Walrus on it, as well as a bunch of other tracks the other day. Then you uploaded the Earl's Court soundboard recording. That was fantastic to get that out there.
Because I've had that for years, right? I just, you look at Earl's Court and you think, right, there and then, you know, there's bootlegs of it. And it was only recently when someone caught a picture of it that I put up. They said, oh, actually, that's the fourth. There's not really any proper good quality audio out there for the fourth. And I thought, well, there and then is there, which I think is the fourth another day. But then when you look at YouTube, the quality's awful on it. It's awful. So I thought, I'll go and get it converted. It cost me £15 to get it converted. I thought, I'll go and get it done. I've got a setup with a studio in Edinburgh, and they're the only ones that let me turn up and sit and wait and watch them delete the file afterwards. So I went to them and got it changed over, and I was quite surprised because it was done. It does say that it was done at Rockfield. What's the date on it there now? 14th of the 12th, 1995. So it's not the full show, it's 58 minutes of it.
Yeah.
But it's been mastered. So it's been, there was obviously a project that was half done and then stopped, or whatever it may be. But it's 58 minutes of how they would want you. You know, it's familiar to millions, it's been professionally mastered, but it's Earl's Court. So it's a really powerful listen. And I think when I got it back, I thought, oh, that's different. Well, it's not unheard. It's unheard in this quality. And it's got the touch of Owen Morris on there. It's got Owen and Nick sat working on Rockfield, making it sound, you know, massive. So, I thought I'd chuck it on. And actually, it's been the biggest video so far, really. It's been very, very viewed by a lot of people.
Obviously, it's a legendary show, just where they were at that time. You know, they've reached I mean, I was saying on an episode the other day, I mean, this for me is peak Oasis. You know, that, you know, I just, that image of Liam wearing that amazing, like, blue and white shirt, and you know, how many times, how many people have tried to find that, you know, that exact blue and white shirt, because it looks awesome. There's the brilliant, like, little moment that's been like used as a gif a million times of Liam pointing towards the camera and then sticking the fingers up. You know, that is a legendary gig. And so to hear it, peak Oasis, that lineup in this crystal clear clarity.
It's like being in the crowd, isn't it? It's literally like being in the crowd, about 15 rows from the front, getting the absolute vibe and sound from it. Yeah, no, I've had a few DAT tapes over the years, and I've got them all converted. They're all converted now. That was the last one. I don't know why I put it off. I think I did put it off thinking, you know, I've seen vinyls come out of it. I've seen CDs. It's, like I say, it's all over YouTube, but it's different, you know. Mm. Go and find it and watch it, because it's different. It's one that you'll listen to and go, oh, I'm glad I've heard that one. It's worth it. So, yeah, it's been that was just a random little upload. I'm looking at doing something at the moment. I'm putting... I've got a version of Street Fighting Man, sound by Noel. So I'm going to put that out shortly and just chuck that on again. That's something else that's been there for a few years. It's just been on a tape. And I think actually it's just another brother singing it. Again, it's unheard. It's something worth having to listen to. So I'm going to, when I get time, do that. I think once I've got London out of the way and get back up and have a breather, I'll try and do it next week, I think. This feels non-stop at the moment. If I list what I'm doing, it's not that much. You know, I've gone from having a full-time job to not. I'm working in events full-time now, and I don't seem to have that much to do, but it seems to take up all day, every day. But we enjoy it, don't we? That's what it's about.
Well, yeah, I was saying to someone the other day, actually, about you having gone full-time, and they sort of said, oh, the jammy bastard, he's like, he doesn't have to do a day job anymore. I was like, mate, having spoken to Carl a few times, I think a little office day job sounds like a far better deal to me. Christ, you're working your arse off.
The best thing is, because 50%, I've definitely taken a pay cut from my old job. You know what I used to do? It's just, I've got kids that are young, you know, and they're only young once. And, you know, they're up to the age of 4 to 5. You only get that chance once. And I'm happy to do this stuff until, as long as the bills get paid and no one's scared, everyone's got an app on the mouth, and there's no need to worry. So I'm enjoying doing this, but I'm more enjoying spending time with the kids. You know, plus if I'm here, they can't sneak up to the music room and start breaking stuff. So it's a double-edged sword. I've enjoyed this last year, and I'll enjoy this year as long as things keep going as they are. Yeah. But as you know, the plan is open the bar at some stage. Once again, another venue has just fallen through on that with Glasgow. So I'm getting really itchy feet with it now. It needs to be done soon. So I might have to start looking back at home. I mean, God forbid, opening a 90s themed bar in Manchester. But that might be the new plan, because I've put it off because it's definitely going to cause me more stress, because it means I live up just outside of Edinburgh now. It will be more family stress to go from being here all the time to suddenly being down in Manchester 3 or 4 days a week. But if it's not happening here, it's not happening here. I can't find, Glasgow's letting me down a bit. I can't find any venues that are any good. You know, if you want a little pub that's made out of plasticine on the outskirts of Glasgow, that's then I'm good. But I don't want that. I want a nice bar in the city centre, so it's hard to find the right spot. It'll come, it'll happen.
Yeah,
no rush though.
Definitely. Cool, mate. Well, look, really, really excited. I look forward to seeing you on that Friday. Was it 31st of March, is it?
31st, yeah. Let me know what your times are. I think you said you're coming over late on, didn't you? I'll try and let you know what the itinerary is as early as possible. I'm just waiting, obviously, other people's schedules, times and travel plans. But if you end up staying over, let me know. If you end up staying over, if you're just coming over for a couple of hours, just give us a shout. But if anybody wants to get involved in that, I'd say we're probably going to have tickets for sale now for maybe 3 or 4 more days. So go in, book the day off Friday the 31st and buy a ticket, and come and be blown away. It'll be good.
And the fact that I'm going to be there as well, you can probably double the ticket price now.
Well, this is it. You know, I was about to book a stripper, so now I don't need to do that, so we're all good.
That's my other day job. Anyway, Kyle, bless you, mate. You're doing the Lord's work. And yeah, look at that. It's just about to, the City Games is about to kick off, so you can go and watch that now.
Just there
you
for
go,
kick mate. Off. There we go. The alarms are ringing. Perfect. Okay, mate. I'll speak to you shortly anyway. Nice.
All right. All the best, mate. See you later.
All right, cheers. Cheers. Bye.
I'm Noel.
And my name's Liam. I'm the singer and he's a guitarist songwriter.
I'm a guitarist songwriter. Been together about, got together in about 1991. Done a few gigs, farting about for a bit around Manchester. Nothing was happening.
Just rehearsing, getting our sound. And then we went one day, we just went, right, you up for it, old beam?
Oh, yes.
I went, so, yes, yeah. I'm mad for it, let's go and have the world.
Shocks away, Ginger.
Shocks away.
Hello and welcome back to the Oasis podcast, the ultimate audio guide to Oasis. Today is a special episode where I'm going to be taking a look back at the history of Oasis and specifically all of the different members, whether official or unofficial, that have been part of Oasis. So if you ask someone on the street to name members of Oasis, most people would give you two names, Noel and Liam Gallagher. However, from the initial founding of the band that would become Oasis through to their very public implosion in Paris almost 20 years later, there's been various people that have made their mark on the band without the surname Gallagher. Today, I'm going to talk through the basic timeline of these various comings and goings, either those that became official band members or just as regular touring members or those that made their mark in their own special way. Big thanks to the Oasis Timeline and Stop Crying Your Heart Out websites for their invaluable resource. Oh, and that Some Might Say book by Richard Bowes was pretty handy too. On the 16th of April 1990, music obsessive and wannabe singer Chris Hutton approaches local plasterer and fellow Man United fan Paul Arthurs, aka Bonehead, to start a band. Bonehead had previously been in the Manchester band Pleasure and Pain and was known locally as an accomplished musician. Originally called 061 before changing to The Rain, Bonehead would play guitar with Chris singing. Soon after, Paul McGuigan, aka Gwigsy, aka Gwigs, joined the band and they played their first gig as The Rain at the Milestone Pub with a drum machine keeping beat. The gig was attended by local drummer Tony McCarroll. After the show, Tony is approached by the others to join on drums and does so. They play some more gigs locally as The Rain, with the lineup being Tony on drums, Gwigs on bass, Bonehead on guitar, and Chris on vocals.
Well, this bunch of losers here were masquerading as a band with no tunes, and I sort of took pity on them, really.
Still masquerading as a band, but we've got tunes.
Yeah, well, that's a cool thing. At least you're
No, they were in a group called The Rain, which is a really great name for a band if you come from Manchester. Lorraine! I went to see them and they weren't very good. And so they said, do you want to join? So I said, no, not really.
They recorded a couple of demos, one at the Out of the Blue studios and one with the Smiths bassist Andy Rourke at his home. Plus they paid some more gigs throughout 1990 and into 91 before Chris was sacked and replaced with Liam Gallagher at the suggestion of Paul Ashby, otherwise known as Biggin. With Liam joining, they changed their name to Oasis and played their first gig with Liam on the 14th of August 1991 at the Boardwalk. Liam's brother Noel, at the time a roadie for Inspiral Carpets, was in attendance. After the gig, Liam approached Noel to join on guitar, who agreed to do so. After months of intensive rehearsals on the 15th of January 1992, they played their first gig with Noel, completing what would go on to be known as the original Oasis lineup, Tony on drums, Gwigs on bass, Bonehead rhythm guitar, Noel lead guitar, and Liam on vocals. She always comes up smiling and playing with her hair. She sometimes says I'm lying. She thinks that I don't care. I know that if I see you, I have to look and smile. I know that if I hear you, I think I'll run a mile. Heralded by many as the classic lineup, this was what originally captured the imagination of millions of fans, with the raw energy and attitude generated by this band of brothers, and not just the main two, overshadowing any limitations in their playing. This remained unchanged right through the recording and release of Definitely Maybe, with the only amendments being that Noel would occasionally step in on vocals, and the fact that at various points Bonehead played other instruments, such as keyboards on Live Forever and Whatever on MTV, piano on Dixie's Dinner, and accordion at the end of It's Good to Be Free. The first major disruption to this lineup was after September the 29th, 1994, when Oasis played the infamous Whiskey A Go-Go gig, which went horribly wrong due to the band ingesting copious amounts of methamphetamine. Noel then left the band, causing 9 gigs to be cancelled, before returning on October the 14th in Minneapolis. That lineup continued to remain the same through to the end of the Definitely Maybe tour and the recording of comeback single Some Might Say. However, on 30th of April 1995, Tony McCarroll was sacked and replaced with Alan White, younger brother of Paul Weller's drummer, Steve White. The announcement was confirmed via a statement on May the 2nd, 1995.
Yeah, I'd probably made up my mind knowing that Champagne Supernova was coming up and Don't Look Back in Anger and Wonderwall, that he wasn't going to be able to play those songs. It became apparent recording Definitely Maybe. We spent a lot of time fucking about trying to get the drums right, and it was never right.
When we were doing Some I'd Say and stuff, Noel was like to me, it's fucking the last time he's ever in the fucking studio. I was going to Tony, you've got to get your shit together, Tony. Oh, bye, Tony.
Drummers are really smelly, useless, talentless, losers, man. I mean, fancy having a job where you bang things all day. That's like orangutans do that, don't they? And gorillas and monkeys and that. They just bang things, like bang dustbin lids on their heads and all that. That's what they do, innit? And drummers just do it and get paid loads of money for it. Fucking sack them all drum machines, I say, man. Telling you, can't wait till I'm in a dance band. Press the button. Doesn't answer back, don't have to feed it, don't have to pay no money, don't have to buy any drugs, don't have to get any women, don't have to do nothing, put it in a flight case and fuck it in the back of the truck and then speak to it again.
This lineup then recorded their next album, What's the Story, Morning Glory, as well as the continued touring and promotion. On September 13th, 1995, the workload got too much for Gwigs and he quits the band due to nervous exhaustion. He's replaced with Scott McLeod from the Oldham band The Yah Yahs on September the 26th. But McLeod did not last long, as he then subsequently quit on October the 17th. That short spell, however, included a number of gigs, plus also the filming of the Wonderwall video. On October the 19th, still without a bass player, they were booked to perform on the David Letterman TV show. Utility player Bonehead stepped up and played the bass, with Oasis performing as a four-piece.
Change.
On October 31st, Gwigs returned to the fold in time to play La Luna in Brussels, a warm-up for their massive Earl's Court shows a week later. Those gigs were captured in the There and Then DVD, paired with the Main Road concert a few months later. It is this lineup with Alan rather than Tony which many people count as their favourite, and this, by many, are Oasis peak years.
How did you get to be re-involved with the group? Because you were off at the time, weren't you?
Yeah, I was off, lost the plot. I mean, it's one of them things, didn't see it coming, you know what I mean? And we should have done, because it's like a memory of your band, you know what I mean? He was going through all this shit, and then one day he wakes and just thinks, can't cope with this, I'm off. Then we're all, like, blaming ourselves, like, we didn't see it coming, you know what I mean? We're all gutted, man. Yeah, it was heavy.
And I think it was good, you know, when Gwig said he'll do it, I didn't want anyone else rather than Gwigs to do it, because it's Gwigs' band, you know, it's like, he's part of Oasis, don't want, you know, Tom, Dick and Harry playing bass, do you?
We were going to get Alan's mate in. Of course, Liam being Liam decides that there's already one Cockney in the group and two is far too many, we're turning into a Cockney group, mate, you know what I mean? It's like, I was like, what are you talking about, Governor? So, luckily enough, Gwigs decided he was well enough to play. The fact that I'd threatened to sack him if he didn't do Earl's Court might have had so much to do with it, he seemed to perk up quite dramatically after that phone call.
That core lineup then remained the same through until 1999, but there were some changes to the touring band, which we'll look at now. Up until this point, Oasis Live was a straightforward affair, with just the five members on stage sticking to their primary tasks. This is other than Noel's acoustic set, which became a fixture of their shows from September 1994. With some massive gigs coming up, however, including two sold-out nights at Nebworth, in order to better interpret the more complex sounds of the What's the Story Morning Glory record, the live band expanded, including bringing in Mark Feltham on harmonica, Janet Mason on piano, plus an orchestra comprising strings and horns. Boned even played piano on a few tracks. After that series of mega shows, the same lineup played the gig for MTV Unplugged. Plus, Sheryl Crow's keyboard player Mike Rowe was drafted in, primarily to provide Hammond organ. One noticeable exception was Liam, who backed out of the gig with a sore throat.
Good evening. Liam ain't going to be with us tonight because he's got a sore throat, so he's stuck with the ugly four, as they say.
Next up was the Be Here Now tour, which had the same core lineup, but enhanced with two new keyboard players, a now permanent Mike Rowe, who had also performed on the Be Here Now album, plus ex-Lemon Trees guitarist Paul Stacey. The full orchestra was pared down to just incorporate a small horn section, plus Dennis Bear Brown took on the role as the ringmaster, pumping up the crowd and opening the door of the red telephone box for the band to enter the stage. That lineup remained throughout the Be Here Now tour. The next major change came during the recording of Standing on the Shoulder of Giants, when founding member Bonehead decided to leave the group. 16 days later, on the 25th of August, Gwigs also left.
I always think back and think, well, we're in a massive chateau in the south of France. We're driving Aston Martins, we're doing this, that, and the other, and it's like, wow, you know, there shouldn't be any tension. That should have been the most fun bands ever had.
In the middle of all this, Liam was trying to kick the booze and I was trying to kick the drugs, and all the lyrics on that album reflect that time, really.
I go there, I've gone, right, we're going to have another crack at it. Me and Akira are going to try and get on. I'm going to knock the booze on there. Went there 2 months, didn't drink an ounce. Bonehead started getting wicked, which is fine because that's what he did, but everyone sort of thought, oh, well, he can handle it. I felt as if I was getting bullied. But I'd done it anyway just for the sake of the band and my voice.
There was a problem with Liam, he was drinking too much. It's like, all right, so none of us will drink. It's been said that I drank too much while I was there. Of course I didn't.
No, he was like opening bottles of wine each night. So I could see it very soberish, and I was thinking, you're actually a bit of a knob.
I'm a grown man. I'm going to stop doing what I do. I'll okay it with the singer. Is it all right, Liam? We'll go up to his bar up in Hills. He drinks a Coke. Do you mind if I have a pint of lager, Liam? I am driving, so I'm not going to get legless.
Bono was just being a bit of an arsehole towards one of the people that was working with us. I thought he was being a bit out of order, to be honest. I decided in a drunken state one night to have it out with him. He took offence, said he was going back to England. I said, I'll call you a taxi. Never seen him since. That was it.
No one told me to leave, you know. I mean, Liam rang me up, come on, we could sort it out. I actually left that session. I didn't leave the band on that day. But I got home and I spent a couple of months serious thinking. I mean, it's not a small thing to do, leave that band. And in my case, it was like, well, I want to write songs. I want to write music. I want to write lyrics. I want to record my stuff. For me, first and foremost, that's what I want to do. That's what makes, I suppose, somebody leave a band like Oasis, just wanting to further themselves.
He left, then Griggs leaves, and that's it. So it's pretty much Schitt's Creek.
I remember that being a really, really, really good time. And then Bonehead and Griggs left, right out of the blue. Again, we're just back in the midst of chaos, you know. It was quite a weird ending, to which was turning out to be quite a good year for us.
I can't really speak for Griggs, but I think he was doing it for reasons similar to mine. Family, again, what to do, what he wanted to do. My feeling was just like, oh, God, no, don't say that, Griggs, please.
I haven't spoken to either of them since the day they left. I sometimes sit down and think, well, they've spoken to everybody else. I mean, what did I do to them, you know? Especially in the case of Griggs. I don't know why he left. I haven't got a clue. I don't know whether he's told anybody else, but nobody's telling me.
I'm never, ever, ever, as long as I live, gonna slag anyone or call anyone or be backhanded towards anyone in that band. I won't be where I am because of them and because of Noel. It's just not in my nature to say anything untoward towards any of them. I can't, won't say it. And there are no feelings like that.
This left the band short-handed, and we as fans wondered whether they would or could carry on. Longer term, that was the question, but there was an immediate issue, which was an album to finish. Never officially a member, but Paul Stacey, now nicknamed Strange Boy, stepped in to save the day, becoming a vital part of that process of recording Standing on the Shoulder of Giants, including playing keyboards, guitar and bass across multiple tracks. His input is hugely influential on the album and cannot be understated. On November 1st, 1999, Oasis finally announced a replacement for Bonehead, with former Heavy Stereo frontman Colin Archer, aka Gem, joining on guitar. His first appearance with the band was the recording of the Go Let It Out video. That video featured Noel playing bass, which was a fun moment for the video, but a permanent replacement would be required. Bass players were approached and even auditioned, with former Monaco frontman David Potts, aka Potsy, close to landing the job. However, on November the 12th, 1999, Andy Bell, formerly of Ride and Hurricane No. 1, joined on bass.
Now, one of the things that's changed over the past little while is the band itself, right? Mm.
Yeah, Gem on lead guitar. And
lead guitar?
Yeah, I'm taking a back seat for the lead guitar.
Come on.
I never wanted to play lead guitar in the first place when I joined the group. And because Bonehead couldn't play, I was going to do lead guitar. But I'm not too good at the fiddly bits. And with me singing backing vocals as well, it tends to get in the way, you see. So it'll free me up to do that. Oh, and Andy Bell is playing the bass guitar, formerly of Ride and Hurricane No. 1. And he's actually another very, very talented guitarist. And he's kindly stepping in on bass for as long as he wants the job. He's got it. Whether he sees himself being a bass player for the rest of his life, I don't know. But or maybe I'll just move to bass, which seems like a bit of an easy job to me. Four strings, double. Get them two playing guitar.
It must be a challenge when you have to go and replace two of the band members. I mean, when you're that big, you know, is that a challenge?
It's a challenge for the guys who stepped in, you know what I mean? Because they're not stepping into a band that does a couple of gigs in England and then takes another 6 months off. I mean,
well, how did you get started? I mean, do you put an ad in the London Times and say wanted?
No, no. I mean, Liam wanted to hold auditions, you know, and I was like, I'm not going through all that. And I'm auditioning like 50 or 60 bass players. And we knew Gem from way back when he was on Creation Records. And we knew Andy as well, so we knew that we'd get on pretty much all right with him.
The lineup now consisted of a Britpop supergroup of sorts: Alan White, drums; Andy Bell, bass; Gem, rhythm guitar; Noel, lead guitar; and Liam, lead vocals. While the lineup lacked the raw power of the original five, the greater musicianship provided by Gem and Andy brought an additional dimension to the Oasis live experience. Many people to this day still favour this lineup, and listening back, there is much to appreciate, especially in things like the Led Zeppelin-inspired ending of Cigarettes and Alcohol, where the band was really able to let loose. Into the Standing on the Shoulder of Giants tour, the lineup changed again, with Zeb Jameson coming in on keyboards for Mike Rowe, who was heading back out on tour with Sheryl Crow. That wouldn't be the only change on an already tumultuous tour. On May 23rd, 2000, Noel decided to quit international touring. Rather than cancel the shows, as they'd done when Noel had disappeared back in 1994, this time it was agreed the shows would go on, with Matt Dayton from Mother Earth and Paul Weller's band stepping in. Gem taught Matt his guitar parts, and Gem switched to lead. They played through a number of ill-tempered shows in Europe before Noel, due to his word, returned for the UK and Ireland stadium shows in July.
Are you going to have to whirl me on this one, right? I think I'll be done. And this one's for our kid anyway.
Into 2001, and from May to June, Oasis went off on a tour of America with Black Crowes, known as the Tour of Brotherly Love. Mike Rowe returned on keyboards, however, Alan White had to pull out with an injured thumb, being replaced by his brother, Steve. Alan then returned for a series of shows to celebrate the band's 20th anniversary, known as the Noise and Confusion Tour. Into 2002, and the release and tour of Heathen Chemistry. Mike Rowe was out off again with Sheryl, although this time it would be permanent, and he wouldn't play with Oasis live again, although he's now a fully fledged high-flying bird. This time his replacement was the ex-Cooler Shaker keyboard player Jay Darlington, aka Jesus, aka The Shroud. Jay would remain a very recognisable and very popular figure throughout the rest of Oasis' live career. March 12, 2003 would see Alan White play with Oasis for the last time, as then following the Heathen Chemistry tour, but prior to the recording of Don't Believe the Truth on January 16, 2004, Alan was asked to leave Oasis. Proud Mary drummer Terry Kirkbride, who'd played an acoustic gig in Zanzibar in Liverpool in May 2003 alongside Noel and Gem, contributed to the sessions, playing on the track Mucky Fingers, before Zach Starkey joined for the majority of the Don't Believe the Truth recordings, and then made his live debut in Poole on June 23rd, 2004, as a warm-up for Glastonbury. I can't Zach remained the drummer for Oasis through until 2008. However, he was never really committed as a full member, as he also juggled this with commitments with The Who. This meant Terry Kirkbride came back in a number of times, including playing on tracks such as Who Put the Weight of the World on My Shoulders and Sitting Here in Silence on My Own, plus playing live at Noel's The Dreams We Have as Children Teenage Cancer Trust show and a short acoustic tour with Noel and Gem to promote the Stop the Clocks compilation. Zach remained with Oasis throughout the recording of Dig Out Your Soul, but then left before the tour, heading back to The Who. In May 2008, it was announced that former Lightning Seeds and Robbie Williams drummer Chris Sharrock would be joining Oasis for the tour.
Would you like to say hello to our fifth and final drummer, Mr. Chris Sharrock from Liverpool? Fuck me, if it's not the Son of God, Jesus Christ, playing keyboards. So the thing is, you can't see from here, but he's got his beard on back to front. He's milking it a little too much now these days. This next song's called The Master Plan. Thank you very much.
This then completed the final lineup, which remained in place through to the band splitting in 2009. The final lineup was Chris Sharrock drums, Andy Bell bass, Gem rhythm, Noel lead, and Liam vocals, along with Jay Darlington on keyboards. The final tour had mixed reviews, as while Chris Sharrock's drumming and the general musicianship was praised, the relationship between the brothers was clearly strained, and the atmosphere at the shows was very negative. Looking back on the career of the band, while there was a number of ins and outs, as we've seen, when people discuss their favourite era, it tends to come down to a couple of choices. Whether you prefer the raw, powerful, albeit simpler playing of Bonehead and Gwigs, versus the more skilled and more nuanced musicianship of Andy and Gem. Personally, I'm a Bonehead and Gwigs guy. They were there when I was most into Oasis, and for me, when they left, the soul of Oasis died a little bit, and things were never really the same. Although that said, I do really appreciate what Gem and Andy brought to the band and take away the emotional ties to the earlier era, and I can see why that would be the sensible choice. The drummer question also comes up, and you can make arguments for each of the four drummers to have been the best. That said, while Zach and Chris have their proponents, most people do tend to come down to Tony versus Alan, and I'd say the majority just about favour Alan. The fact he played on their biggest tracks, including Wonderwall, Don't Look Back in Anger and Champagne Supernova, is obviously a factor, but what he played on those tracks cannot be underestimated. Would those tracks have been as iconic or successful with Tony's drumming? We'll never know. But anyway, what was your favourite era of Oasis? Feel free to comment below, let me know, and as ever, stay in touch, stay engaged, stay young.